Welcome, this is Anthony Haynes. I'm Creative Director of Frontiners Limited. Welcome to the Grey Lit Cafe podcast, brought to you by Frontiners Limited. Frontiners is a communications consultancy focused on engineering, infrastructure, sustainability and research.
The topic of today's episode is pitching, and I'm delighted to say, to talk us through that topic, we have a guest who is Yuxia Zhou, who is Assistant Professor of Accounting at Nanyang Technological University in Singapore. Welcome, Yuxia.
Thank you so much, Anthony. Hello, everyone. So I actually just finished my PhD studies at University of Cambridge, where Anthony helped me so much during the whole pitching and the job market process. Yeah, so I'm very happy to be here.
Yes, well, it's a very enjoyable, kind of quite intriguing and creative process trying to work out the best ways of pitching work. So I look forward to discussing it with you. Now, this interview is based on that your quite recent experience of pitching. And for many listeners of this program, they'll be completely unfamiliar with the process. And I'm sure there'll be listeners now thinking, what are we talking about? What do you mean pitching? Pitching what? Pitching to whom? Pitching for what reason? So could I ask you, first of all, just to establish the context for us here? What are we talking about?
Yeah, exactly. So for those who are not familiar with the academic job market, so when PhDs finish their studies, they need to go into academic job market and trying to find a position as an assistant professor or postdoc researcher. So in this area, especially for business school PhDs, yeah, we need to pitch, basically introduce our research idea to potential recruiters. And then there's an elevator pitch, basically to summarize your research idea, aiming to get the listener's interest in learning more and potentially hire you.
And it's very much part of it's a kind of institution in its own right. It's very much part of business school culture. It's built into the calendar. It's a large scale enterprise for everyone concerned. It would be useful just to have a little more evocation of the setting here, the scene. Mm. So there'd be listeners here thinking, well, what's the pitching like? In other words, where are you? What setting are mm-hmm. you in when you're pitching? And mm-hmm. how long is it going on for? And who's mm-hmm. there listening to you? And, you know, mm-hmm. are there lots of them, or is it two or three people, or what? So could you just mm-hmm. help us to conjure up the scene in our minds?
That's a very important background to know. So the pitching can be online or in person, depending on the choice of the interviewers. Mm-hmm. So if it's online, then it's only in Zoom. You have 2 to 3 people. If it's in person, then it's actually in a very large convention hall. Mm-hmm. And then there are a lot of booths from different recruiters, different schools. And then so you're within a booth, and then you are facing 2 or 3 potential recruiters. And then that is your normally the first round interview lasts for 30 minutes. And then normally one of the first questions they will ask you is, what's your dissertation? What do you do research about? Then that's how you start your pitching. Yeah, so that's the background. Yeah, the time normally varies a lot. So depending on how much they are interested in your pitch. So it can be from 30 seconds to 2 minutes. If they interrupt you, that is a good signal because it shows their interest.
Right.
If they are not interested, then you just go on until they get interested and then ask questions.
I see. And just to be clear, these the people interviewing you, that they're all faculty members, are they?
Yes, they are all professors, normally associate and full professors, so very senior. So they are familiar ground of your research, but they are not necessarily familiar with your topic. So you need to treat them as strangers and then introduce them to the topic.
Okay, right. I get it. Mm. So
yeah,
you've had extensive experience of this recently. You've done very many pitches to faculty from, I think I'm right in saying, dozens of universities.
Mm. Yeah.
So you've learned quickly from the experience. I mean, when you were making all these pitches, what surprises were in store for you? Was it just exactly what you expected, or did you find there are things that surprised you and things that you learned from? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we can actually, what surprised me, we can talk about it in two parts, from my side and from the listener's side. So what surprised me from the listener's side is that they tend to ask very similar questions. Mm-hmm. And then, although there will be some variations depending on their own research area, so they have different kind of presumptions, but normally the questions are very similar. So if you are prepared to answer one set of questions, normally you are prepared to answer the rest of them.
I
And then
see.
also the attention span is really short.
Right.
So they normally try to interrupt you after maybe 10 seconds. They're already saying, "Oh, let me talk," because professors like to talk, right? So they just
Yes.
talk about their own research. So that's what
Yes.
I find surprising from their side. Yeah. And then from my side, what I find very surprising is that previously I thought pitching is I prepare some material and then I pitch to them. But after all this process, I realized that actually I'm learning from my audience to
Right.
know what is the main contribution of my study. So actually my pitch evolved so much over the process that the audience, using their facial expression or hand gesture, will let me know what they're interested in, what is the main contribution of the study. So I actually learned the main contribution of my research during the pitching process. It's not actually before, it's during them. Yeah, and then I tailor my study and all my presentation afterwards.
I'd like to unpack that in a minute because I think that's a fascinating point. But could I just ask you, when you say people tend to ask similar kinds of questions, could you give us an example? I mean, what kind of questions will they ask?
Yeah, for example, my study is about why do investors abandon sustainability? And then I study it based on a setting of United Nations supported principles of investment, which is the largest institutional network to combine all those responsible investors. So I look at why do these institutional investors want to voluntarily delist from the network? And the first question normally comes up is that when they delist from the network, does it really mean they have abandoned sustainability or are they just leaving the organization? So that's normally the first question. And that is basically asked in every pitch. So then I learned that this is the key thing the audience wants to know, then I get prepared. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Once you, I love it when questions are predictable because then you think, okay, well, I'll answer the questions before they ask them. You know,
Yeah,
I'll
just
prepare. Yeah, I'm
yeah.
interested that you say attention's very short because it seems to me clearly in this kind of interview there's a power relationship. Like they've got something that you want, which is important. And I'm not saying you necessarily need to agree with me here, but I feel there's quite a hierarchical culture in business schools. Ironically, because sometimes business professors will actually espouse theories of management that are not so top down and not so hierarchical, but actually often in their behavior, you're made very aware what the hierarchy is. So I'm really interested in when you said I learned what the contribution of my research was through the actual process because I work with researchers and scientists in a whole variety of ways, and I find that very often, against all the evidence, they're wedded to a linear process. And by a linear process, I mean they think you do the thinking and the preparation first, and once you've got it all clear, then the communication comes at the end of a process. You just transfer the information to someone else through a process of information, and it seems to me that's often not the case. But in actually, there's a kind of co-creation that goes on through a dialogue. So, could I put you on the spot and ask you just to tell us a bit more about that discovery process of how your thinking changed and sharpened up?
I think that comes to the core thing of doing a research is that figure out what's the main contribution. So during the first several pitches, I always got asked, what is the main, what is the beef in your
Yes,
study?
yes.
And I got very confused. What's the beef? What are you talking about? And then, so I provided several answers. I could see that they are not very satisfied with my answer because
Okay.
their eyes are not very stable. They are just looking
Yes.
at other things. And then after a while, I mean, I was lucky that even though they didn't like my answer, they still selected me for the second round interview. So in the second round interview, they are more relaxed and they said to me, "Let me tell you what's the beef in your study." And then, so they tell in their understanding what they think is most valuable or interesting to them. And I realized that as a junior researcher, because I'm entering this area, maybe I haven't well understood what is the most important thing in the whole literature. And
Yes.
then So it's very helpful to get to know the senior's perception, and then to learn from them what is the most important thing in your study. Then I incorporated what the answer they told me about the belief of my study into my future presentation, and that has such a profound change in all the reactions in my presentation. Yeah, so that's a very interesting thing I learned.
I think this is fascinating. I think it happens a lot with doctoral research because you spend, let's say, 3 or 4 years studying something, and it's certainly not an entirely individualistic
No.
process, but it is your project and you're living with it all the time. And then it can be quite difficult to kind of get some perspective and think, well, actually other people might think different things are important. What kind of thing did they mean by the beef? What would be an example with your work
What
with?
surprised them? What's new to the literature? Yeah, I think one issue for researchers is that we are, as you said, we are in this project for so long, and then we know every tiny details of it. So when we try to write the whole paper up, it's actually quite hard for us to grasp the core thing out to get the story clear. That's actually a difficult thing. So it really takes a lot of practice to articulate what is the most valuable thing in the study. And sometimes
Absolutely.
it just takes a bystander to pick it up.
Yes,
So they know it.
I completely agree, and it for me it underlines a theme that I've touched on many times in this podcast, which is in these formal scientific and research contexts, people often don't realize the real value of informal talk. And it's massively helpful. It seems to me it's a smart strategy because effectively what you're doing is outsourcing a bit, isn't it? It's like, I've got to come up with a contribution, and I'm going to get them to tell me what it is, and then I'm going to listen to it and put it in my own words. I mean, let's let them do the thinking. Is
Yeah,
that a
exactly.
fair?
And I think that's absolutely right. And then also in the training, as I mentioned before, when you are telling me the whole framework of the problem, need, benefit, and value, and then from your expression, I also got to learn so much about my research because you will be telling me that, I don't think that's the main benefit. What's the benefit to me as a stranger on the street? So then got me to think a lot about what is the real contribution, of the paper.
Well, it's interesting. I learned a lot about that from going to a doctoral conference at the Judge Business School, where several PhDs were presenting their work, and they would talk for quite a long time. And then they'd say, "Are there any questions?" And there was this guy, I won't say who he is, but he was a member of the faculty who nearly every time put his hand up and said, "So what's your contribution?" And they would often get frustrated and say, "Well, I've just kind of spent 45 minutes telling you." And he'd say, "No, what's your contribution?" When I tried to work out what would make him happy, what would make him feel, "Oh, okay, I get it now." And I came up with, I mean, some people might say quite a simplistic thing, but saying, first of all, what's the problem and why does it need to be solved? And then secondly, if you solve it, what's the benefit of that and what value does it bring?
Yeah, exactly. So I actually incorporated that framework into my presentation. So in the presentation, I first say, what is the problem? Okay. Why do I need to know the answer? And then I say it out loud myself. And why is it important to know it? And I also provide the answer. And then I can see the smiles from the audience, actually. They're just the smiles emerging from their face. They will not say, okay, this person knows what she's talking about.
I love the fact that you had that question, why is it important to know it? Because very often early career researchers don't tell you that. It's implicit and they assume that you know. So they say something like, there's a gap in the literature, and my research fills the gap in the literature. And I love the fact that you're saying, and why is that important? You've done a great job in terms of giving us the context and also showing the kind of the nature of the process. Let's think about what you would say to other people in this situation. Maybe they're just about to go through this pitching process, or you might like to think about, well, what would you like to have known a year ago that you know now. So regular listeners to this podcast will know that we often frame things by asking people for three bits of advice in ascending order, really. They're bronze, silver and gold points. So I hope that's okay if I adopt the same structure with you. So what's your bronze point? What's your bronze recommendation or piece of guidance?
So bronze advice, this has been probably talked about by many other people, is to get a lot of practice and especially get help from a professional trainer. If you don't have such resources, please practice with your friends, families, or colleagues, because it's really helpful to practice with anyone that is not in your field, because they will have a very fresh mindset to come here to listen to you and ask you a lot of very basic questions. Then you'll need to practice how to explain your very sophisticated, with quotation marks, research to anyone on the street, including your grandma.
Yeah, that'll exactly. Yeah, very often as people develop as researchers, the sort of the circle of people who they deem worth asking advice from shrinks, and they convince themselves that really it's only the specialists that it's worth getting feedback from. And I think, yeah, of course it's useful getting feedback from specialists, but actually what about other people? What about a person who just doesn't know what you're talking about? It's not,
Yeah. I could say that I got equivalent amount of help and inspiration by pitching to Anthony versus pitching to the professor in my faculty. So it's actually the same level of help and inspiration.
Well, that's great. I mean, you get I'm flattered that you say that, but you get different kinds of questions, don't you? So thank you. So that's your bronze point, which is get input from other people of various types. Well, what about the silver point then?
My silver point would be to have a growth mindset on this process, because you are never ready to be on this journey. You are never well prepared. So just when people ask you, what are you doing? Just pitch to them, just practice. And then you may not know how to pitch it at the beginning. You may make a lot of mistakes and think that, I should have said the other way. I should have just changed that words. But it's totally okay. Like, even if you, like me, said wrong things in the interview, that's totally fine, because you can learn from it. And then the pain from the mistakes will help you grow so much, and then will bring you unexpected surprises later on. So I think just to have a growth mindset, always learn, and then be eager and ready to make changes.
Yeah, it's fascinating. We've recently published an episode with another researcher who's also an architect. Her name is Sabui Essa. And we called the program Don't Fall in Love with Your Work, because she was very influenced by a design professor who constantly used to teach his students, like, okay, you come up with a design and you think it's great, don't fall in love with it. You have to be prepared to change it. You have to be prepared to adapt as you get more feedback and as you discover more about it. And that's yes, I like your nomenclature of calling it a growth mindset. That's a really positive way of conceiving it. So thank you. So you've given us this silver point. See it as a process, and gradually improve on things. So okay, I'm intrigued to know then, what's your gold point?
My goal point is probably not a surprise for audience on this channel, because that is the thing I actually learned from Anthony. That is the framework of doing the research and also presenting the research. That is to understand first the problem of why you are starting this research. Second, why do people need to know the answer? Third, what's the benefit of the answer? And lastly, what's the value? So basically the problem, need, benefit, and value framework. You can apply this framework everywhere. And then when you pitch like talking to a stranger on the street, and you can ask yourself, why do they want to spend their next 1 minute or 3 minutes to listen to me to talk about this? And what is the benefit to them? Not only to the literature, but to them. And then in that way, you it will actually encourage you to think more about the overall impact of your study and about how you're actually adding value to the society. And then in that way, the core message of your paper will also emerge in the process. Yeah, so that will be my GOAT level advice.
Yeah, that you've raised the question there of the listener thinking, why do I why is this worth my time? And I think researchers often fail to recognize that they're in a sales job. And in fact, some people work in research in academia precisely because they don't want to be in a sales environment. Like, they see that as kind of commercial and vulgar and so on. Well, it may be that you're not necessarily pitching for cash, but it seems to me there's something called the attention economy there, and people have limited attention, and you're pitching, you're saying actually it's worth your while to pay me attention to do divert your attention my way.
Yeah, exactly. Would just like to add that because you said many people come to academia because they don't want to be a salesman or they do not want to talk too much or network too much. But actually, that's exactly what you need to do in academia because your future career progress, your publication depends a lot on how much people know about your research. So even if you become a senior person, you still need to pitch a lot because the more you pitch about it, people know your research better, and then people are more likely to publish it, cite it, and then your idea maybe make a better impact in the whole area. So the pitching is everywhere. It's not only for juniors finding a job, but it's also for seniors to make trying to make a better contribution to the whole field.
Yeah, it seems to me often with early career researchers, they kind of believe that the all important thing is to do good research, and if it works good, the quality for speak will speak for itself, and it will gain an audience. And my view is more like, well, doing good research is necessary, but it's not sufficient. I mean, you can do great research, and it can just be ignored.
And then also in the process, I've learned that the presentation and pitches are sometimes more important than the paper because people may not have time to read the paper, but they will listen to your pitch and presentation. So, yep, the pitch and your presentation slides are truly important.
And let me just unpack some a point from something else you said about you have to explain why it's worth them giving you time there. I think very often when I'm working with individual researchers, I kind of sometimes I'm working with them and I think this is all a bit underwhelming. It's like the research is fine, it's respectable, but somehow it just feels a bit underwhelming. And I think often the problem there is what they've told themselves is the task is to make themselves clear. They have to make what their research is clear. And of course, you have to do that. It's absolutely essential. But it seems to be that's not the main ambition. The main ambition is to make it engaging or even compelling. So not just clear, but there's so I like your emphasis on the word why earlier. You need to tell them why they need to know.
Why didn't you know? And later you need to tell people why they need to give you the funding and the grant to do your research because it's really expensive to do research.
Absolutely. Thank you. That's a really helpful, really kind of insightful reflection on the process, and I hope other people who embark either on the exact process in business schools or comparable processes elsewhere in science and research will find that try to apply your insights. They seem to me really valuable ones. So, Yashir, thank you very much. I'm really grateful for you giving your time and indeed giving the interview your attention. So, thank you.
Thank you, Anthony, for giving this opportunity to for me to share my experience and also offer some my take to the fellow
Yeah.
researchers.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. Grey Lit Cafe is edited by Dr. Bart Hallmark and produced by Frontinus Limited. Frontinus specialises in grey literature forms such as proposals, publications, papers, and reports. The music is from Handel's Water Music, courtesy of the United States Marine Band and Marine Chamber Orchestra.